It's wonderful to be back. Thank you very much again, the shul, the Rebbetzin, and of course, the Balas Achsanya. Thank you very much for inviting me and for hosting me. And I wanted to take the opportunity just to mention at the outset that I'd like to dedicate this year that we're learning the Divrei Torah in memory of Rav Boaz Mori's mother. Her name is Chaya Bina Bas Shmuel, Mrs. Rina Mariela HaShalom. And some of us have more or less connections with the yeshiva, but anyone who lives here, I hope, knows that we would pretty much have none of it if it wouldn't have been for the yeshiva and Rav Boaz in particular for his vision. And obviously, a lot of who he is comes from his mother, and therefore we all owe her a debt of gratitude, and the Divrei Torah should be L'ulei Nishmasa. I heard once from Rabbi Moshe Weinberger.
What's your name?
Excuse me, my name? David Gottlieb. So I heard once from Rabbi Moshe Weinberger a story about the Rebbe, the Rashab of Lubavitch, who was a very, very intense and brilliant man. And he used to say shurim, they called mamarim, sometimes 7-8 hours. Don't worry, I won't. But once it was a cold winter night and he was feeling under the weather, and his Rebbetzin really would have preferred if he wouldn't have given the mamar, but the Rebbe wasn't going to stop. So the Rebbetzin went over to the Shamis, and she gave him a bowl of soup. And she told him, you have to make sure that the Rebbe has the soup. And the Shamis, of course, always took his orders from the Rebbetzin. Probably the Rebbe did too. I'll tell you quick, this is an introductory story, but I'll give you a digression of another story. When my oldest son was in first grade, he asked me for something, and as I often did, I said, you have to ask mommy, whatever mommy says. So one day he finally responded, but we just learned in Chumash, in Bereshis, who Yom Shol Bach? The Rebbe said that the Abba is supposed to be the boss. I said, Yaakov, you just learned the difference between Torah Shevchsav and Torah Sheval Peh. Because I don't know any Jewish family, certainly not any rabbinic home, where that's the case. Mommy runs this house. Anyway, so the Gabbai took the Rebbetzin very seriously. So he brings the soup to the head of the table and he gives it to the Rashab. And the Rashab takes the spoon and he's stirring a little bit. But in his eyes, he's a million miles away. And he's very, very deep in thought. And this goes on for a while and he's stirring. And the Shamus is getting more and more nervous. The soup's getting cold. The Rebbetzin's looking in. So finally, in sheer terror, he kind of just screams out and he says, Rebbe! If you're looking for the lakshin, it's on the bottom. So everyone was kind of shocked. And the Rebbe said to Moshele, Nichamtani, in life, if you want the good stuff, you have to dig for it. It's usually on the bottom. It's deep. You have to uncover it. So I thought of that in preparing a shira on Asara B'Tavis. We know that other than Yom Kippur, the four what we call minor, quote-unquote, fast days from the Navi Zechariah, of all of them, the Tzom Haravi'i, Chamishi, Shvi'i, and then Asar B'Tavis, Tzom Ha'asiri, of all of these, I think unquestionably, Asar B'Tavis is the forgotten fast. It's not part of the time of tshuva, like Tzom Gedalia, which gets a little boost from being Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's not part of the whole time, the tekufa of the Churban, Shabbos Batamos, Tisha B'Av. It's the middle of the winter, Asar B'Tavis. Its distinction is it's the easiest fast of the year. But how many of us really know what it's about, understand it? So what I would like to do is I'd like to look for the lakshin of Asar B'Tavis with you. I want to dig a little deep with you. Try to give you a little bit of a hakdama, just introduction, just to know historically what are we commemorating when we fast. I want to then share with you a very unique halachic discussion, briefly, but it's important that you see the halacha. And then that will be a springboard to share with you three pieces of lakshin, three deeper machshava insights, which stem from Asar B'Tavis and this insight halachically, but really will impact us not only for the fast day, but I hope throughout the year. So first of all, just as a historical context, according to Chazal, Asar B'Tavis is actually a culmination of a unit of three. There's a sefer from Chazal known as the Megillas Tainis, which actually tells us that the first terrible occasion that we're supposed to commemorate is actually on the 8th of Tevis. And according to Chazal, that is the anniversary of when the Septuagint, we know that was, the Gemara tells us, right? The famous king, Talmai HaMelech, took the 72 Chachamim, and he put them in the rooms, and he made them translate the Torah into Greek. And each one of them saw certain psukim that, among ourselves, we can understand. Awkward maybe, but we can figure out. But you translate it to a wider world, they were worried about the misimpression that it would give, and they decided to make a little bit of a change. And whereas a miracle occurred, all of the Chachamim came up with the exact same changes. Obviously, impossible, al derech hateva. It was a miracle. We thank Hashem for the miracle. It was Kiddush Hashem, the miracle. And yet, in the eyes of Chazal and many, many sources, it's not the topic of the shir per se, but overall we look at this event as a negative. A little bit of the uniqueness, the intimacy between the Jewish people and the Torah was diluted. Obviously, there's a lot of positives to translating of Torah. We're from a generation that has been reborn, re-energized because Torah has been translated. But the translation itself, and especially issues with Greek, which again are not for now, was looked at overall by Chazal as a very bad thing. Number one, that was on the 8th of Tevis. Then it says also in this same source, the Megillas Tainis, that on the 9th of Tevis we also should fast. It's also a bad thing for a terrible tzara. It's also quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's not clear at all what happened then. And it's left for commentaries of Shulchan Aruch, the Taz, the Magen Avram commentaries. They say, you know what happened? Ezra HaSofer died. It's the Yortzeit of the Tzaddik. Now, we don't usually have fast days for Tzaddikim. If you're a Chassid, you usually dafka have a L'chaim, right? The Hilula, the Yortzeit. You don't say Tachnun. That's really a Yontif for men. So, why dafka we would have a fast day, even in some circles, for Ezra HaSofer? Interesting question. Not what I want to focus on. Just as an aside, some of the more recent Svarim, especially those that expose a little bit some of the more academic literature, they point out that they think it's a little bit of a mistake. It wasn't Ezra who died on the 8th, but it was actually Nehemiah, his partner. If you know the story of Nevi'im, they were the two great tzaddikim who led the revival and the return to Tzion and eventually the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. So one or the other were responsible for a tremendous, tremendous epoch of Jewish history, and their Yortzeit is also commemorated. Obviously, the minug is not to fast either of those days, but you should realize that there is a certain build-up to Asara B'Tavis. So what happened on Asara B'Tavis? See, here we know from Chazal, and actually once we know to look for it, you go back to Malachim Beis, it's a pasuk in the Navi, that what happened on Asara B'Tavis? That Nebuchadnezzar, he surrounded, he besieged Yerushalayim. And this was about two and a half years before the Korban. It was a long and difficult period in Jewish history. It did not happen like that. When they finally broke through on Shavasar Batamas, there you had brutal fighting. Imagine, it took 3 weeks to get from the walls of Yerushalayim to the Har HaBayis. What took so long? Donkeys are slow, but they're not that slow. The answer is the Jews were fighting with every fiber of their being. According to some estimates, again, this is an aside, but it's an important one, we're so focused on the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av, according to some estimates, there was at least 1 million Jews killed at the time of the Korban. I'm not enough a historian or not to know one way or the other. I'm not even sure how they know these things. But the point was that the Tisha B'Av was not just about the destruction of a building. Right? The Jews didn't just, you know, roll out the red carpet and say, here's the Beis HaMikdash. So that was a very intense and very, you know, painful and bloody period then. But what started it? What was the two and a half years or so later, almost 3 years later, earlier, they surrounded and they besieged the city of Yerushalayim. And if you look in Malachim Beis and Perek Chafei, it says that this happened on the 10th of Teves. In fact, as you may know, sometimes tricky for kids to understand. I guess maybe adults do. But there are a number of Sifrei Tanakh which are concurrent. As it's not all, well, Yehoshua, and then came this, and then came that, the Shoftim and the Malachim. That's true, especially in the beginning. But some of the Svarim, Daniel, Yechezkel, some of them are actually talking about the same period. So even though we have in the story, and Malachim talks about the siege, some of the Jews had already been exiled. There was an initial exile, especially with some of the leaders. They wanted to get the leaders away. Our enemies have always known that if they can separate us from our tzaddikim, from our leaders, from even the educated or the upper class, so one of the people who had already been exiled was Yechezkel, the famous Navi Yechezkel. And sure enough, right, the Al Naharos Bavel, that's before the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, he's already exiled. But he's prophesying, obviously only with Nevuah, how else would he have known what's going on? But he prophesies a very important pasuk, which we're actually going to get back to shortly. But he prophesies from already far away about what occurs. Be'etzem hayom hazeh. Hashem tells him, you should know, tell the people, even though you're, how else would they know? He obviously had a nevuah, that while you're over here in Eretz Yisrael, what's happening? The siege has begun. Be'etzem hayom hazeh. On that very day. So we have not only that background, but 8th and 9th, but even about Asar B'Tevis itself. We have Makoros, again, they're not as well known. As I say, it's the least known or appreciated, if you like the expression, the Cinderella of the fast days. But the truth is, if you know where to look, we have sources in Tanakh and in Chazal that tell us about this event, the siege of Nebuchadnezzar. So, that's introduction or stage number one of this year. That's what's going on, this is what we commemorate. So in order to appreciate the uniqueness and really the depth of this day, I want to share with you an interesting halachic discussion. Take 7-10 minutes to give you an interesting halachic discussion. And it comes from a sefer which is not so well known, even to Lomdei Beis HaMedrash, a sefer called the Avudraham. Avudraham is one of the later Rishonim, primarily made his impact. There is a sefer. We now have extant a sefer Avudraham. The typical Beis Medrash wouldn't have it, but a very good Beis Medrash, or certainly a good library would have it. For the most part, the average person who even knows some of the things from the sefer, it's because later Poskim quoted it. And when I say later, I mean even Rishonim, like the Tur and others quoted him. So he made his main mark in the issues of the Siddur and the calendar, the Jewish calendar. So here he has the following interesting chiddush. Let's say Asar B'Tevis fell out on Shabbos. What would you do? Now, first of all, before you get too confused, it can't fall out Asar B'Tevis. But why can't it fall out Asar B'Tevis? Well, on Shabbos, why not? We'll get to that in a second. Why can't it fall out? You're right, it can. Why not? Because when they made the calendar, now, is that true about every fast day? No. What fast day can be on Shabbos? What else? No, that's when we actually fast, but what could fall out? Tisha B'Av could fall out of Shabbos. But for whatever reason, in infinite wisdom, when they made the calendar, it can't. But you all know that that is a secondary and frankly less than ideal stage of Jewish history that we're in. The original vision of the Torah is that there is no scripted calendar. It makes it kind of hard to plan, but apparently the Torah wanted us to be more spontaneous. You cannot plan in advance when the kids are coming for Pesach. We don't know exactly. You know, you can get the week, basically, but not the exact day. But if the calendar was based on witnesses and the Kiddush HaChodesh, so it could, whenever they came, you count 10 days, that would be Asar B'Tevis. It could easily have been on Shabbos. There was a 1 in 7 chance. No more, no less. So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, again, theoretically, if we can, or Meheri Yabana HaMikdash, the fast won't exist anymore, but it's a theoretical point. But so he says, you know what? Unlike other fast days, including Tisha B'Av, which we push off till Sunday, we fast on Sunday, when Tisha B'Av really is on Shabbos. Asar B'Tevis, he said, would fast on Shabbos. Asar B'Tevis would not be nidche, would not be pushed off. So Rav Yosef Karo, famed author of the Shulchan Aruch, he quotes this. He says, I don't know what he's talking about or where he got it from. He leaves it, question mark. Other poskim point out that there's a Rashi in Gemara that says explicitly, not that way. Rashi's talking about how you Tisha B'Av, you push off. Rashi adds, for example, like if it would be Asar B'Tevis, same thing. So not only we don't know where it comes from. Not everyone agrees with it. But where did he get it from? Why did he say such a thing? See, he tells us. It goes back to our great Navi Yechezkel, the pasuk I mentioned. The Navi talks about how the Melech Bavel sieged the city, be'etzem hayom hazeh. I stressed that phrase before. Who here is an expert in Chumash? Who knows there's another day that also has a similar phrase. I'll give you, it's also a fast day in the Torah. What's another day we refer to? Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, that phrase? I almost gave it away. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh is, there's only one fast day in the Torah. Yom Kippur. Ki Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. So says, what happens if Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos? We fast. So says Abu Draham, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Just like on Yom Kippur you fast on Shabbos. So if Asar B'Tavis would come out on Shabbos, you'd fast then. So before we get to the logic of that in a minute, even that is not necessarily acceptable. Maybe you're familiar with the great tzaddik, the Baruch HaLevi Epstein. He's most known as the author of the Torah Tamima. He was from the same family, the Aruch HaShulchan, a famous, very famous rabbinic family, Navarra, Gelita. So he also has a book on Chumash called the Tosefes Bracha. So he points out it's not the same thing. Because in Yom Kippur, it's talking about the tzivoy, the command to fast. And if you don't do it on that day, you'll get kares, whatever. It's talking about the requirement to fast. In Yechezkel, this is not a halachic, legal, you know, do this, don't do this, normative text. If you look in the Navi, it's Sipur Dvarim Ba'alma. It's just telling a story. When they had a siege on that day. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, on that day. So it's not even clear that that's a great proof. But I'll give it to him. It's a proof. But what? How could it be? Think about it for a minute. How are you talking? Tisha B'Av, which is the destruction of two Batei Mikdash and whatever else, but two Batei Mikdash, that is not strong enough that we'd fast on Shabbos, we push off. But this, which is just that they decided to make a Hora around the walls, they just surrounded the walls, that is so Chamur that we would even push off Shabbos. Very hard to understand. So I'll give you two quick answers in the strictly halachic sense, but then that will be our springboard for the remainder of this year to give you a number of approaches, more deeper, a little bit hashkafa that we could get from this. So number one, as a halachic answer, it's interesting, just again, you should be just familiar with the background. Most people aren't, so you'll be ahead of the game. A number of the poskim point out that there's an interesting phenomenon. I mentioned before at the outset the very famous pasuk in the Navi Zechariah that talks about the four fasts. And I read, how did we refer to them? The Tzom HaRavi'i, the Tzom HaAsiri, Shvi'i, etc. What are those numbers? Don't be confused. Tzom HaAsiri is Asar B'Tavis, but what is the number in the Navi referring to? Not the day of the month. But sorry, from Nisan, what? Which month? Tavis is the 10th month, right? Fourth month, etc. So, actually, in the Navi, we don't have a reference to Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, just Tammuz. Not the Tisha B'Av, just up. So, we have a Mesorah, the Gemara, and later sources tell us it's this day, it's that day. So, a number of poskim make a fascinating Chiddush. Again, they do not teach you this in elementary school, not even in seminary usually. This is you don't know this, but this is, I can give you all the...
Not so sure.
Exactly. Torah is a continuing education sport, 100%. And if you, anyone questions you, I'll give you the Ma'amar Kamos, I'll give you chapter and verse. A number of poskim point out that, in fact, even though the fasts have a status of what's known as Midivrei Kabbalah. What is Midivrei Kabbalah? This has nothing to do with mysticism and Ren Bendels and Amukah or anything like that. Midivrei Kabbalah is a halachic term for something which is post-Moshe, post-Sinai, but it's not rabbinic. It's in the Tanakh. Like Megillas Esther, it's in Tanakh, but it's not Midoraita, it's not from the Torah, but it's not only Midorabanan, quote-unquote, it's somewhere in the middle, Midivrei Kabbalah. So anything that's written in the Tanakh, it has the Kedusha of being in Tanakh, but it's not from the Torah, it's not from Moshe. It's an intermediary. So these fast days are in the Navi. They're Midivrei Kabbalah. So the poskim point out, what's Midivrei Kabbalah? That you should fast on those 4 months. But it's not so ayayay, kadosh in stone, that those days are a secondary rabbinic edict. Now, 99% of the time, what's the difference? Right? We've been living hundreds and hundreds of years since that's merged. But they suggest here, one case is the difference. If it would come out on Shabbos. Since the day, call it Shiva Asar B'Tammuz or even Tisha B'Av, since the day, the ninth of Av, that's not sacrosanct. So that could get pushed off. That's not going to beat Shabbos because that date is not sacrosanct. Av is sacrosanct. But What's the one exception, ironically? Why? Be'etzem hayom hazeh. It wasn't saying it's exactly like Yom Kippur. But what it's saying is, unlike the other fast days where the only thing we have in Tanakh is the month, Asar B'Tavis from the Navi Yechezkel, not from Zechariah. You have to really be a Baki in Tanakh. You have to attune Nevi'im. If you know that, which you know precludes all the yeshiva guys. They don't know any. But okay, at least some of the seminary students might at least know too. Unfortunately, Nebuch, yeshiva, they don't teach you Tanakh. But if you know the Navi Yechezkel, it's very technical, but it seems to work out. If you assume that the reason that other fast days, including Tisha B'Av, are pushed off is because the day is not really so sacrosanct, it's the month, so Asar B'Tavis may be an exception to that. Well, that's one halachic explanation. Another halachic explanation, which is also really interesting and surprising, is mentioned by the famous Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk. He's known to maybe some of you more as the author of the Meshech Chachma, one of the landmark Perushim on the Torah, but he also has a halachic sefer known as the Or Sameach, which is really a halachic commentary on the Rambam. So there, he writes, based on some other sources, that what's the halacha about fasting on Shabbos? We're talking about fasting on Shabbos. So, let's say you fasted on Shabbos. What avera did you do? Is it a Torah avera or a rabbinic avera? What's the halacha? You shouldn't do it. Eat chont, cool. But let's say you fasted. What's the avera? So it's actually a machlokas. Some farshim say it's an isra daraisa, going back to the mon or whatever. But many, many others say no. What's the mitzvah to have lechem mishnah or to have three meals? That's actually rabbanon. Midaraisa. It's not like yontif where there's a mitzvah of simcha. You have to eat midaraisa. Shabbos, the isra of fasting may only be rabbinic, may only be a rabbanon. So comes along the Or Sameach and he says, I'll make a compromise. Depends. Did you fast the entire Shabbos, all 24 hours? Or just Shabbos day? It says, if you fasted all 24 hours from sundown to sunset to sunset, what they call in halacha, me'es l'es, the 24 hours, so that is a Torah prohibition. You can't go all 24 hours of Shabbos without eating. You didn't make Kiddush. Kiddush is midaraisa, although the wine may or may not be. You have to invite me back for a different Hilchos Shabbos year for that. But he says, and here we're getting to the punchline, let's say you ate Friday night, but you decided you woke up Shabbos morning, you're fasting the whole day. Aser, only midarabanan. Okay, again, the technicalities in Hilchos Shabbos part of it will have a different shear. Why is that relevant? So he says, aha. Tisha B'Av, we asked, how could Tisha B'Av be more, quote-unquote, lenient than Asar B'Tavis? Tisha B'Av, we push off. Asar B'Tavis, we don't. We do even on Shabbos. He says, because what's the difference, among other things, between Tisha B'Av and Asar B'Tavis? Tisha B'Av, you fast from the night. If you would fast Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, you'd be fasting all 24 hours of Shabbos. That would be violating the Torah prohibition of fasting on Shabbos. So that, as much oomph as Tisha B'Av has, it does not have that much. It cannot push off a Torah prohibition. But Asar B'Tavis, anyway, we get to eat at night, we only have to fast during the morning. So worse comes to worse, if you fasted those hours, those, you know, whatever daylight hours there are, what's the avera? It would only be rabbinic. So the same rabbanim who said in general you're not supposed to fast on Shabbos morning, they, here with the oomph of the Navi, it's not just rabbanim, it's Divrei Kabbalah, they could say Asar B'Tavis is different. Interesting. Again, not so practical. A, we don't have Asar B'Tavis on Shabbos, and B, you're not fasting on Shabbos, because we don't necessarily pasken like the Vudraham. But you should know that there is this very interesting and unique, I would say even quirky, halacha, at least a discussion of it, when it comes to Asar B'Tavis. So with that groundwork in mind, and this unique shita, which we may or may not hold like, and which may or not be possible in the modern calendar, but with all that in mind, what's the deeper message? What would be so unique, so powerful, so potent, so relevant about Asar B'Tavis that it could not be moved? Clearly, whether we hold like it, it's practical, not practical. As I said before, what's that deeper message? What lakshin is the Avudram trying to uncover for us? So I'm happy to hear your suggestions. I have three to share, but hopefully we'll get a fourth now. Please.
I was thinking that, you know, there's a principle of the Hatchala of the Tzara is very
That's that.
Which I was going to mention also that Tishah.
First one, I'm going
to. Most of the burning actually was on
Want to switch? So. I'm serious. You're beautiful.
So if
you're mechaben, yes.
If it's not the nitcha, then you're still, you know, having
to. So let me. Good. Excellent. Let's. I have three approaches, and alas, we still have three because you are mechaben to one of mine. But if anyone has any other ideas, please, Bavakasha, please share them. So here's one answer that I want to share with you. And this, you anticipated on your own very beautifully. The explanation is given by, among others, Rabbeinus and Eibschitz, and the famous Hasidic thinker, the B'nai Yisachar. So that's what you said. But let me develop it the way they do. Beautiful. Very good. So they point out, on the one hand, Asar B'Tavis is a double-edged sword. It's complex. On the one hand, what really happened then? Nothing. Right? Had the B'nai Yisrael done Shuvah and there had not been a Chorban, we wouldn't even have been a blip on our screen. Nothing happened yet. You'll tell me a year or two later with no food or whatever, that's already getting desperate. And even then, still, had things ended up well, we wouldn't even remember that then. But the day of Asar B'Tavis, on the one hand, how could you compare that? On the other hand, that was the Haskalah. And we know in life, for good and for bad, and I want to speak about both in a minute, the hardest thing sometimes is to start. Whether it's a new mitzvah, whether it's a diet, the hardest thing is to start, to change direction, right? To make a U-turn, right? When you, it's a lot harder to make a U-turn than to go straight. Whether it's, even if it's uphill, it's still harder to make a U-turn. To change, to start in a new direction is the hardest thing. So says Rabbi Yonasan Eibschitz, on a deeper level, this was the Tchilas Peronus. On the one hand, in and of itself, it wasn't as bad as what eventually happened. But this is what got us down the road to destruction. And he says something very powerful. He said, once that happened, Acharkach haderech kevusha lifnei oyvei amo. It was as if the road had been cleared for the enemies. Now, I assume he's not denying that theoretically we could have done tshuva and reversed course and done nacha U-turn. Theoretically. But once that happened, it was like the proverbial snowball rolling downhill. There was a natural momentum, a spiritual force towards destruction. Until that happened, that was the chiddush. And it took a lot of oomph, again, oomph in the negative sense, we had to do a lot of averages for a long time, till Hashem let that happen. But once that happened, that became the default. So to get out of that, not that it was impossible, of course it was possible, but it was much, much harder. We, on autopilot at that point, was Churban. And they give the point, which is very beautiful that you mentioned. In fact, about Tisha B'Av itself, the Gemara makes the point. The Gemara makes the point, again, not so well known, that the Gemara says that they lit the Beis HaMikdash on fire on Tisha B'Av towards the evening. But most of the burning happened on the 10th. So the Gemara says, so then, which one, when did it really get destroyed? On the 10th. And there were Chachamim who said we should have it on the 10th. So how come the Halacha became not the 10th but the 9th? Aschalta de Paranusa. The beginning is the most bitter pill. The beginning is the most bitter pill. Think about it. Again, I don't want to depress anybody, but even think about something difficult or painful in your own life. It could be that later on the road, worse things happened. But when you look back, to a large extent, the most bitter pill to swallow, when you first got that news, when the bad thing first happened. And everything else is a totsa'ah, is a outgrowth of that. I'll even give you kind of a very simplistic or crude marshal. It's like missing the exit on the highway. Right? You're stuck for a while. Doesn't mean you can't ever get out of it. But that has consequences. So when you look back at a difficult test and you saw you on a certain thing, the haschala, even though again it could be, very often, Rahman al-Hassan, somebody gets a difficult diagnosis. Very often they actually feel fine at the time. Could be, God forbid, the disease will progress. Sometimes even the medicine makes you feel. There could be more painful times later. But you not compare, to some extent, any of those later experiences to the moment of the Haschalas HaParanus. So that, on a national, spiritual level, says Rabbi Yair Slash, That's the oomph. That's the chumrah. That's the severity that we don't appreciate, unfortunately, of Asar B'Teves. On the headlines, on the masthead, is Tisha B'Av, and maybe, you know, playing a secondary role is Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. But the truth is, none of it would have happened if there hadn't been an Asar B'Teves. And if we're sensitive to that, that is painful. But I want to point out to you, ladies, the exact same thing is true in the opposite direction. It's the same thing for good as well. And in fact, it's bashert that this lesson comes on Teves right after Chanukah. So I'll give you, it's not too late, I can give you still a little Chanukah vort. You'll file it, as a very smart crowd, you'll file it away for next year. A number of Mefarshim ask, what was the need for Chanukah? What was the need for the miracle? I said, what do you mean? I learned since I'm a kid that you have, there's only one oil and it lasted. So Mefarshim point out, not so simple. First of all, the Beis Hamikdash, the menorah, the wicks were very, very thick. Some of Farshim say they could have filed them down, made much thinner wicks, and there would have been a flame. What do you mean that there's enough oil for one day? That's a combination of how much oil plus how much oil is being drawn by the thick wick. A thinner wick draws less oil. Al derech hateva, they say, there would have been enough oil with thinner wicks for the whole week. Halachically as well, you say, what do you mean? I learned that my kids read in books and they showed me that all the other oils, the jars were tamei. True. There's a halacha that, without again making it very not so complicated, but if most of the people are tamei, which they were, between the fact that many of them had already assimilated and even the firmer ones had just fought a war, when most of the people are tamei, national things, not a private thing, but national things like the menorah for the Jewish people, for example, can be done even when you're tamei. So what do you need a miracle for? So what did they do it all for? It's a different answer to the question. The whole question is so radical the first time you hear it, because it upslugs your whole childhood. That's what I'm here for, if you haven't been able to tell. It's a recurring theme of my shiurim. With all due respect to the kindergarten teachers, to the moros, to the mechanchim, I love them all. They're the most important teachers you could ever have. But, and there's a reason that they teach simplistically, because you're a little kid. But the goal, of course, as adults, is to not remain trapped by what we learned when we were little kids. So there's a number of very beautiful answers to the question. But one, which a number of the poskim of Yosef Engel, others say, is very simple. You're right. A random Adar, a Kohen walks into the Beis HaMikdash and he's running short on oil, he files the wicks, it's no problem. A Stam day in Nisan, no problem. But this wasn't a Stam day. This was the Chanu. This was the Chanukah. This was the rededication. This was the first day of a new beginning. And when you have a Haschala, you do it right. Because the Haschala sets the tone for everything else. Again, imagine it like a relationship. The Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people had basically broken up. Why? Because we cheated. We weren't loyal to our spouse, right? We were doing all these terrible avaras. So Hashem left us. Terrible, right? So what happened? A small group. They did tshuva. So they go back to the Beis HaMikdash. In essence, they're coming back to the Marshal and saying, we want to make up. Take us back. So again, I can speak as the man in the room, right? Husband gets into a fight with, he has to come back. You know, with the flowers, with the you don't come back acting, you know, especially if the husband was wrong, which is, of course, I'm redundant, the husband wrong, right? First rule of marriage, of course, the husband is always wrong. So, given that fact, if you, again, in all seriousness, let's say it would be a really chas v'shalom, a serious blow up. Husband comes back and just acts, he's not angry anymore, no screaming, but he comes the same way he would have been on a random Tuesday. That's not the way you make up. I can each couple in their own personal way, but you did something wrong, you got to make up. So, that's what the poskim say. You're going to rely on this shvacha, a little eighth of a wick. Technically, you could have been yaitzeh with it. But that's how you're going to start the new era of the chashmonayim, with a shvacha wick, with a bidyevit technicality, a legal loophole, tum hotra betzibor. This is the haschala. And you never get a second chance to make a first impression. It's a religious truth as well. So whether it's for the pain of Asar B'Teves or for the good, as we saw in Chanukah, we can never overemphasize how important starting out is. It sets the tone. Think about it. Yeah, the first Shabbos you were married, the first anniversary, the first anything, the first birth, right? You know, all things being equal, people try to make those are special moments, and they should be because they set the tone. And you should think, I'm pretty sure there's no one here who's married for 1 year. You should. It does. It's not just whether it's in mitzvos. We've all had a lot more years than one to work about our mitzvos, or our marriages, or other things. You can always set new goals, right? You decide you take on a new thing on yourself, or you and your spouse are going to start. There's a new minute, yichbeis. We're going to spend. We're going to go out one night a week, or we're going to start walking 2 nights a week together, or something. Whatever it is, you can be married 25 years. You can still have a new thing. The way you start is a huge thing. That's not a guarantee for the future. There's no guarantees. But it sets the tone. It's a very important lesson, and it's a lesson which we can learn from Aser B'Teves. That's number one. Number two, there's a drasha that I saw once from the Chasam Sofer, as well as in one of the Hasidish Svarim known as the Kedoshei Yisrael. I'm not exactly sure who the author is, but they basically made the following point. There's a number of Makoros that point out, in both in Gemara as well as in the Navi Yirmiyah, that one of the main things which led to the Churban was Chilul Shabbos. Now the famous Gemara that we know about, that they teach you on Tisha B'Av, about the cardinal three averes, is of course true. But throughout the Gemara, you have here and there other Gemaras, other sources, other texts, which attribute other averos. And usually the way we understand it is that it was those other ones which were like the gateway of averos. Because of that, you think, how you talking? Klal Yisrael is avodah zara, shvichas tamim, gilui arayos. Like, if one person does that, it's like scandalous. The whole Jewish, a rove of the Jewish people? I mean, we can't even imagine such depravity. So how did they get there? So the answer might be this one or that one. And one of the ones, which we have other Gemaras for, and even the Navi says is Chilul Shabbos. You lose Shabbos, very, very perilous. In fact, again, it's hard to understand it, but I'll tell you what the Gemara says. A different Gemara, Sanhedrin, says that Nebuchadnezzar knew this. Gemara says that Nebuchadnezzar was scared, basically what he had seen previously that happened to Sanherev, who started up with us. He was around, he was waiting outside Yerushalayim, but he didn't start the siege. He was tittering, he was nervous. Until, again, according to the Gemara, at least on the simple leading of the Gemara, until he saw a Shabbos that there was rampant, you know, he got his spies or his messengers, however you understand it. He heard about the rampant Chilul Shabbos going on in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, I guess in particular. He says, aha! Now is when I'm going to start the siege. And in fact, therefore, there are some of Farshim who suggest that original Aser B'Teves was a Shabbos. Because when he saw the Chil Shabbos, he said, they're mine. Now they're vulnerable. Without Shabbos, I can get them. That's the kryptonite. I can get them. And again, I think that... Also, it's a big chiddush misunderstanding, but I think it's also one which would help us appreciate, not only in the negative way, understanding what was so bad about Aser B'Teves, but again, as a tikkun, something that we should think about. You know, again, I don't think, if someone would get up and start putting up signs on Ramat Beit Shemesh, Shmiru Shabbos, it would be a joke. So, you know, Baruch Hashem, that the neighborhood that we live in, it's a Shomer Shabbos neighborhood in every sense of the word. But there's really nothing to improve about our Shabbos here. Of course there is. I'm not even discussing the fact that there's still a lot of halachos that many of us don't know, and you can always improve in that regard for sure. But I would focus even on two things. Let's assume that we get all the halachos right. I think there's still two things. Number one is there's a certain ruach, a certain spirit of Shabbos, which is not automatic just because you're not turning on lights. It has to be worked at, and I can't even put into words this. Yeah, but it's a lot of things. I am reminded of, there was a story, I don't know the exact historical details of it, but when I was in yeshiva a long, long time ago in Eretz Yisrael, so I met a Rebbe who told us a story that there was a certain, I think she was a very high-ranking judge in Israel, not a religious woman, but who was entertaining the prospect of being Chazaret B'Tshuva. She sent letters to 20 Gedolim, basically saying, if you can convince me, tell me what's so good about this. So, I hope, if it's a true story, it's fascinating. I don't know about the other 19 letters, but there are, my Rebbe told us about the letter of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Zatzal. She sent back to this woman, And he basically says, there's nothing I could tell you. He says, it's like you're asking me, I've never tasted an apple in my life, what does it taste like? Well, it's a little bit tart and a little bit sweet and a little bit, well, you could be describing 100 things. The only way to know what an apple tastes like is if you taste it. Once you've tasted apples, then you can say to me, is that apple sweet or not? And if you'll say, yes, I know what you mean, if you say, no, I know what you mean. How's that Granny Smith? Okay, you have a context. If you've never tasted a Granny Smith, no adjective in the world can describe it. Yiddishkeit has to be lived. So I would say it's the same thing with Shabbos. I saw a number of years ago, the Nesiva Shalom brings down a shul from Nusach Sfard on Friday night. You say, Raza de Shabbos, Ihi Shabbos. What does that mean? That the secret, that magic of Shabbos, Ihi Shabbos, is Shabbos. At least that's the way he touched it. Raza de Shabbos, Ihi Shabbos. What's the beauty of Shabbos? The kugel? The kugel is beautiful. That's not Shabbos. The candles? Candles are beautiful, and there's so much Kedusha in the candles, but that's also not Shabbos. That's a piece of it. What's Shabbos? Shabbos is Shabbos. It's intangible. And if you haven't, you got to figure out a way. And most of us, I think, in this crowd probably have had that experience, at least sometimes. And if we've tasted the apple, we have to get back. You know, I have some Talmidim, all from Shomer Shabbos homes. They have a very hard time with Shabbos. I'm not talking about strict Shmir Shabbos. Maybe that, I don't know. But they have a hard time. They're bored. They're just bored on Shabbos. They don't know what to do with themselves all day. A lot of adults don't know either. And it's very hard because, again, even though they come from, quote, Shabbos observant homes, it probably was not that different other than the lights and other and dad going to work. If you haven't ever tasted the apple, it's hard. So you try to convince them, you know, sometimes you just have to be like, go into the mikveh. You just got to throw yourself in. You just have to let Shabbos envelop you. You have to try to live it on that level, not just the do's and the don'ts. It's hard for me to put it in words better than that. I wish I could. I'll tell you one example, one thing that you could do. The ones who know how to do this the best are Balei Tshuva. Recent Balei Tshuva, because even Balei Tshuva can get burnt out after a number of years. Invite one over to your house. Your whole Shabbos is different. Invite someone who's not yet a Balei Tshuva. Someone who's on the derech, someone who's learning. It'll probably make a lot of difficulties. There's a very famous video, you can probably find it on the computer if you're interested, about 30 years ago, I think maybe it was, there's a very well-known Kirov organization in New York called AJOP. So they had a dinner in Manhattan, and one of the Balabatim, the Frum Balabatim, who was a supporter and helped, was a fellow, Zohar Latov, he's very, very famous, he's a big Balabas in New York, the Rabbi, Mr. Hilly Gross. And he was the speaker, this is a very famous speech. He spoke about hosting beginners, not yet from, beginners for Shabbos. And it was all very obviously humorous. People literally were on the floor laughing. That's it was hysterical. But he spoke about how having these people were ruining his Shabbos. Here he is, a from guy, and he gets home after, you know, 80, you know, hour work week, and they want to sing Zmiros, and they want the Bar Torahs. And then he starts telling a story, and they go, excuse me, Mr. Gross, isn't that Lashon Hara? He goes, I can't say what I want, I can't eat what I want, I can't sleep when I want. And after talking about how they ruined his Shabbos, he says to them, please keep on ruining my Shabbos. You can get it, you can Google it. Like all good things in life. Be exposed to somebody like that. It will bring you back. Another thing is, work on the anticipation of Shabbos. We actually have an advantage in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, you have an Erev Shabbos. In America, it doesn't even exist, especially in the winter. You're lucky if you make it by candle lighting. Shvitzin, it fits in. Even now it could be hard. But at least in Israel, we have a Friday. We have a concept. We have a siren. We have something. But that's not automatic. We have to work on it. The idea of Tishmoru, right? Shabsosai Tishmoru, other contexts, the Rebbe Radomskin, it doesn't mean observe. It means anticipate. To be Shomer Shabbos doesn't mean to just observe Shabbos. It means to anticipate Shabbos. I had a Rebbe, you see people, you go to the bakery, you're in the Merkaz on Friday morning. What do you say to somebody? Have a Shabbos. He used to say, have a good Erev Shabbos. A good Erev Shabbos. That's also, there's a midah to have a good Erev Shabbos. It's not easy, but that's something to look. If you have a good Erev Shabbos, you're more likely to have a good Shabbos. And last but not least, a few more minutes and we'll finish. It's a very beautiful sefer of a series of svarim which I have on Chumash named the Imrei Baruch. They're actually written by an older friend of mine, I guess you could say, Rabbi Baruch Simon Shalito, who's one of the younger Rosh Hashivas at YU. And this particular volume I have a very personal connection to because he actually gave it to me as a gift and he inscribed it to me. And it's very beautiful Mamarim on Chumash. So he has an essay, Parshas Vayigash, which is often when Asar Batavis is. And he has a piece there where he quotes a different idea than we previously mentioned, a different idea also from the Chasam Sofer, from the Sidur Chasam Sofer. I've never seen the Sidur of the Chasam Sofer, and I never remember to ask him exactly where that is or where he saw it. But in his Sefer, which if you're interested, aside from the fact that I have one you could read, I'm not sure exactly how they got them, but there's like 20 volumes of them in the Leva Torah Beis Medrash. So there are plenty of them in Ramat Shilo. The Sefer, Imrei Baruch on Chumash, very beautiful stuff. So he quotes from the Chasam Sofer a very powerful idea. He says, the Gzeirah, as we mentioned, for the Churban, occurred on Asar HaBetavis. He says, every year, eternity, on Asar HaBetavis, there's another Gzar Din. Am I going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and bring Mashiach? Or will this be another year of Churban? Built in to the spiritual DNA of the universe, said the Chasam Sofer, is that Asar HaBetavis is the Yom HaDin for Geula and Galus. Just like the decision was made originally before the first Korban, 2.5 years before, every year hence, Asar HaBetavis is not about what happened, but what will happen. And therefore he explains why, according to that opinion we started with, the Abu Draham, why would we fast theoretically on Shabbos? Tisha B'Av we don't. Why? He says very simple. When it comes to mourning the past, that cannot push off Shabbos. But we do have an example where you are worried about the future, where you could. In Shulchan Aruch, someone has a really, really scary dream. Again, it's not our minhag to do it anymore, but it's on the books. In Shulchan Aruch, a tainis chalom. You wake, again, when do you have your tainis chalom? In a week? No, it has to be that day. You wake up, you have this very scary dream, you have a fast. Let's say the dream was Friday night. Can you have a tainis chalom on Shabbos? Says the Shulchan Aruch. Yes! The chillin and the chicken soup and the oinig Shabbos I'm supposed to have. So the Shulchan Aruch says something that's so deep psychologically. Shulchan Aruch puts on a psychology hat. He says, if you had a horrible dream, again, not the kind that you just roll over and go back to sleep, the one that really shook you up, that is going to ruin your whole Shabbos. You're fasting, and you believe that that's a constructive way to nullify and counteract the fact. The Galosh Shulchan Aruch says, Oneg hulo. That's his oneg. That's her oneg for that Shabbos. That's better than any chillin and any soup to deal with that scary, ominous dream. So, what is? Think about that. Think, a tainis chalom is on what? The past? No. You're trying to ward off the future. Said the Chasam Sofer. So to Asar HaBetavis. It's good to know about Nebuchadnezzar. You should know about Talmai HaMelech. You should know all that. But that's not really what we're fasting. We're fasting akin to a tainis chalom, or I would even say like a Yom Kippur. What are we fasting for a Yom Kippur? For a good year coming up. So that's what Asar HaBetavis is. And therefore that could even happen on Shabbos. I'll just end by summarizing it, and I'll leave you with one little short story to wrap it up. But just again, just to review, we discussed the historical background, historical from Chazal, from Tanakh, about what happened on the 8th, 9th, and then eventually on the 10th of Tevis, namely the siege of the Nebuchadnezzar. We discussed halachically the idiosyncratic, kind of unique shita that said that theoretically, even if the 10th would come out on Shabbos, we would fast, we would not push it off. We gave a few halachic explanations for why that would be. And then we saw three machshava or hashkafic reasons. One, which you had mentioned about the haschala, how important beginnings are, the tov and the mutav. Either way, beginnings are important. And again, I stressed, there's not one beginning. We can always make new beginnings. Number one. Number two, we discussed the power of Shabbos. According to some, Asar HaBetavis was on Shabbos, and Chil Shabbos was the key. We have to re-energize our Shabbos. And number three, I mentioned the idea that Asar HaBetavis is really about the future. It is the Yom HaDin. Will there be a Geula and a Mashiach this year? Yeah, before I finish your question.
Because the second one would be the Chil Shabbos.
Yes, the second one was the Chil Shabbos one, yes.
We would have it on Shabbos.
Yes, yes, excellent. Very good, excellent, yes. If I wasn't clear, thank you. So, I guess, really, because of this last idea, but more in general, I think, again, we have to take advantage of Asar B'Tevis. And it reminds me, and again, with this I'll conclude, of a cute little parable that I once heard about a king who had one princess, one daughter, and he was offering her hand in marriage. But, you know, certain kings, they want a warrior, because that's what they value. And other kings are looking for the richest prince. This king was a real intellect, a real intellectual, and he wanted a son-in-law who was going to be a real pikeach, a real best guy in yeshiva, for real. The really best guy. The best guy of the best guys. So he came up with the following riddle. He said, anyone who solves the riddle has my daughter's hand in marriage. It was a deceptively simple riddle. He said, I have a little bird in my hand. You just have to tell me, is it alive or dead? And everyone far and wide came, so easy, ridiculous. I'm going to become the prince, I'll marry the princess. And no one would get it right. Why? Because they didn't realize that he put the bird in his hand, it was alive. If they said the bird is dead, he opened his hand and the bird flew away. Next. And if they said the bird is alive, he figured out a way. It was such a little bird. As he's opening his hand, he could just crush the bird and show them. Again, they couldn't do it. So this went on and on and on. The one simple yid comes over and says, I can solve your riddles. He says, okay. He goes his hand like this. The drum roll, the guards, everyone. He says, tell me, is the bird alive or dead? And he said, Your Highness, it is in your hands.
What a wonderful story.
Is there going to be a Mashiach this year? Is there going to be a Beis HaMikdash? Is there going to be? I don't know. But it's in your hands. It's in your hands. Thank you very much for coming.